Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of people involved. And the host of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick the hour off right now with Carol Marks, front and center, in conversation with Robbie Holtz. She's a holistic health consultant dedicated to continuing the healing work of her late husband, Gary. She's going to talk to Carol now about the book they wrote together titled Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, A Physicist's Journey with a Remote Australian Tribe. It's published by Bear & Company.
Now let's start by going back to the start of your husband's mounting health problems. In 1983, he was diagnosed with chronic progressive MS. By 1988, he was a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. In 1992, he was told by his doctors he had only 2 years to live. And then your husband had a chance meeting with a woman named Carolyn, who is naturopath, and he met her in a jazz club. So who did she say she could put him in touch with that could help him heal if he was willing to go to Australia? And Robbie, do you believe, as I do, that nothing happens by chance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Nothing is random. Yeah. Well, it was in 1994 that the doctors told him that he had less than 2 years left to live, and that's when he actually, within a day or two, met Carolyn, the naturopathic physician from Australia. And she happened to know how the remote Aborigines in the outback have amazing healing abilities, and put him in touch with a tribesman who came into town just once or twice a year to get supplies. And when Gary contacted this tribesman by the phone number that he was given, the tribesman said, "What took you so long? We've been waiting for 4 months." So it just goes to show how plugged in, how tuned in the Aborigines are. They're The remote Aborigines are just truly amazing in their abilities, and we have the same things. We've just sort of turned them off with modern living, so to speak. We civilized tribes.
Now, Robbie, don't you think most people would react with surprise that Gary, a man that had devoted his life to physics, logic, and cold hard facts, would, after getting that advice from Carolyn and without any support from his friends or family, almost immediately rolled his wheelchair onto a plane bound for Australia?
Well, to be honest with you, Carol, they thought he was crazy. Nobody would go with him. All of his friends and his family thought if he doesn't have anybody to go with him, they won't go. But Gary was desperate. He knew he was dying, and he knew he had a short period of time left. And even though he was a man of science, very much black and white, prove it to me or it doesn't exist, at the same time, I think there was this soul calling, and he also wanted to survive for his two children. So that's what got him on that plane to Australia. And honestly, he didn't think he was coming back. He thought that he was not going to make it out of the desert. But I think what did change, ultimately, a number of things happened for him. But I think one of the strongest ones was that he, even though he was a man of science, he was a physicist and an inventor, the Aborigines taught him that there's a lot of gray that exists that can't be proven, but it exists nonetheless. That was a big thing for him.
Now, getting to the heart of what your husband learned from his Aboriginal teachers and healers about the source of the diseases we all acquire, what are the sources? And doesn't Western medicine treat only our outward symptoms, and it leaves our body just to fight the cause of the illness that we're experiencing really unassisted?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. And I think that, you know, the Aborigines asked Gary to take this out. They asked us to take this information out into the world, to give their healing secrets to Western civilization, because they said we truly don't understand about healing, and that there is always an emotional core to every illness. I don't care whether you were injured in a car accident or given a blood transfusion like I did and received hepatitis C, there's always an emotional core. And if you don't get at that emotional core, it's like picking the top of a dandelion. It's going to come right back. And I think we all know people who have had surgery where they've had tumors removed and they've come back, or that the pharmaceuticals that were given simply mask the symptoms. And the body is just telling you, it's like a dashboard on a car, it's telling you what's wrong. You don't take the light out behind the dashboard and say, now it's fixed, the light's not on anymore. So you've got to get to that emotional core, and quite often it's a subconscious belief you don't even know is there. And that's what the Aborigines believe, is you've got to get the body, the mind, and the spirit aligned, and that needs to be addressed, not just the physical symptoms.
So each emotion that we experience does have a physical effect on our body, and so do the mind and body and soul have a direct effect on each other, would you say, because they are essentially one and the same thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You cannot separate them. And that's what the Aborigines were trying to tell us, is that they are all one. You can't separate that. And so, I mean, science knows that if you have stress for 15 minutes, it's going to suppress your immune system for 24 hours. The body is so related to the emotions. And your cells that you create are going to be different according to the feeling and the emotions that were creating those cells. So if you have a fear-based cell, for instance, it can be very toxic if it's a very negative cell, like self-hatred or guilt or resentment. It can create sort of a garbage effect in the body, and it needs to come out. It needs to be released. And if you have a number of that, if you're constantly marinating in those kind of emotions, you're going to create a lot of toxicity in the body. But if you have something that's a more vibrant, a different cell, it totally creates a very vibrant cell like gratitude or forgiveness. That's a vibrant cell that disease can't really sustain itself in if you are really creating a lot of that in your body. So you really need to pay attention to what types of thoughts and emotions am I creating on a regular basis, because it will create a blockage, or it'll create a different type of cell, and it really makes a difference when you start paying attention to that. So,
now, in the Aboriginal healing process, there are five elementary steps: willingness, awareness, acceptance, empowerment, and focus. And why did Gary Sheeler Rose say that of all of these essential steps, empowerment is the most challenging?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think what happens is the mind is the biggest factor in healing. I don't think people realize how powerful our minds are. And when someone comes to you, whether it's a man or a woman, and they have a white coat on and they've got all the credentials after their name and they're wearing a stethoscope and they tell you, you have a certain disease and this is the way it's going to go, quite often we give that power over and we've just sort of given up, or we believe it. And what you believe is what you create. So you need to get your power back and realize that you are a really powerful creator, a really powerful healer. You have the innate ability to heal. Most of us are not supposed to be sick. Now, sometimes the soul's journey dictates that. A lot of times young children come in very deliberately with some of these things, and that's part of their soul's journey. But for the most part, most of us are having problems that really we can solve, we can fix. And, you know, like I had, at one point I was given a blood transfusion when I delivered my son, and it was tainted with hepatitis C. That almost killed me, and then the experimental drug almost killed me. And I'm very grateful for the doctors. They certainly saved my life. But they also told me that hepatitis C was incurable. Well, I've since cured it, and the doctors, I'm tested every year. I don't have it. So if I had bought into, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to live this nightmare the rest of my life and give myself shots that are really debilitating and live with this disease the rest of my life, that's what I would have done. But I have learned that there's so many options. There's so many ways and answers that can help people. And I live a totally different life because of that. So I took my power back and healed myself. And everyone has the ability to do that if it's part of their soul's journey. Again, as the Aborigines would say, you've got to make sure that the body, mind, and spirit are aligned, and make sure that the soul's on board if that's what the soul wants as well.
So can you explain how modern science is finding the principles of the 60,000-year-old Aboriginal healing system, finding them relevant to what's going on in today's scientific research? Because I found that so interesting.
Yes, that's another good question. Isn't that interesting that what these indigenous cultures have believed for so long is what we're coming back to? And if you were to look at theta healing or quantum, just take quantum physics, for instance. Quantum physics is what you put out is what you get, and yet you're creating these things, and that's exactly what the Aborigines believe. So I just think it's interesting that it's actually quite telling that what these indigenous cultures have believed for thousands of years is what science is waking up to. And what I also think is quite interesting is that I've noticed that in recent times, and I don't know, Carol, whether you've noticed this as well, but in recent times, we're starting to come back to some of the beliefs of these cultures, these indigenous cultures all over. And I think that one of the strongest points that the Aborigines teach us, the remote ones in the outback, is their connection to the planet. That they are one, that there is just oneness, that there's just this connection to the environment. We are the environment. We are the rain. That's why we can feel the rain coming. And that we need to have this strong connection to the planet and to our ancestors. And I think that as a species to survive on the planet, those two concepts are something we need to embrace, to live in harmony and peace and live on this planet in a healthy way.
Robbie Holtz, in conversation with Carol Marx. The book she wrote with her late husband Gary is titled Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, A Physicist's Journey with a Remote Australian Tribe. It's published by Bear & Company. And you can go to holtzwellness.com for more information. Holtz is spelled H-O-L-Z. That's holtzwellness.com. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Let's move on now to another conversation conducted by Carol Marx. This time it's with Lynn Peters Adler. She's an author, educator, and speaker, and she's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled Celebrate 100, Centenarian Secrets to Success in Business and Life, published by Wiley.
Lynn, you're a centenarian expert and older adult advocate. And I understand an event happened when you were 15 that got you interested in shattering the many stereotypes of aging. So what was it?
Thank you for asking. My grandmother took me to buy a new coat in a department store. And the saleswoman, when she went to pay for it, the saleswoman said to me, "How does she want to pay for this?" And implying that she was too old to take care of it herself. And she was only 65. And that just really struck me as wrong. And I, of course, said, well, why don't you ask her? But it just stayed with me, Carol, and it's just put me on my life's course because I realized how much ageism there and how much negativism, I didn't know the word ageism yet, but how much negativism there is toward older people. And I just think it's wrong. I think it's wrong as a society, and I think it's wrong within our families. I just think none of us would like to be treated like that.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, ageism is still alive and well.
Now, it certainly is.
By the way, did you ever think that centenarians, once considered a rarity, are the world's fastest growing age groups? I was surprised.
Well, when I first began my work with centenarians in 1985, there were said to be about 25,000 in the United States, and today there are approximately 80,000. And by 2050, there will be an estimated 602,000 to 1 million. And the statistic I love the best, Carol, is that one in every 26 boomers will live to 100. And that's for a total of 3 million people over the span of the baby boom generation. But isn't that an exciting number?
It is. It's exciting and it's amazing. It's everything. Now, your work in inspiring positive aging in this country has resulted in your founding in 1989 the National Centenarian Awareness Project. Can you briefly tell us what your nonprofit organization's mission is?
Yes, thank you. First of all, of course, to honor those people who do live to be 100, because I believe it's a great distinction for people to live to be 100 or more, and that they should be honored the way we honor other groups, special groups in our country, but also to make society aware of the wisdom, you had mentioned that earlier, the wisdom that they do have to offer us, and the positive role models that they bring for us for our future. And to show, to me, the most exciting thing is to show that at 100 and over, people are still enjoying their lives. And to hear someone say at 103, I'm enjoying every day of my life, it just doesn't get any better than that. And I think we should look at them and say, if they can do it, let's aim for that.
You know, you are so right. Now, in conjunction with the National Centenarian Awareness Project, you've been in touch with 500 centenarians throughout the United States, and you use videos and recorded interviews and extensive surveys to learn their inspiring life stories and what they believe are the things that are responsible for their longevity and how they handled some of life's problems. So how did you find the centenarians you interviewed? And do they come from all walks of life and different socioeconomic backgrounds?
Yes, they do. And I've always said there are centenarians everywhere. This is my second book, and I do have a national reputation, and I have a very active website. So people, I'm known for centenarians, so a lot of times people will just tell me. They'll call me, or they'll email me, or they'll go to my website, which I can give you later, and that's the main, the website is really the home of the hub, rather, for attracting centenarians, and we offer complimentary certificates, congratulatory certificates to anyone who lives to be 100, and a lot of, and I'm constantly doing outreach, and I thank you so much for having me on today, because if any of your listeners would like to order a certificate for their centenarian, they can go to my website, and it's free and it's personalized. So by and large, that's people come to me, but I also do a lot of outreach through the media.
Very good. And you found that the centenarians come from all walks of life and all kinds of backgrounds. Now, fortunately, you put the wisdom you learned from your research into your recently published book, Celebrate 100 Centenarian Secrets to Success in Business and Life. So can you briefly mention the six areas that you focused on when you were asking questions and talking to the centenarians?
Well, it was really a broad spectrum. We focused on their activities and their involvement in society and in their families and the things that they like to do. And when you had mentioned before that centenarians are a living link to history, so of course we did a historical background about what innovations meant the most to them and let them and have them talk about it. I mean, when you think about it, it's mind-boggling. There's a whole section in the book on the innovations that centenarians have lived through in the last 100 years. It's just extraordinary. It's really fun to read. And then, of course, we talked about their work lives, and we asked how they've managed their money over the years, because they started their careers during the Great Depression. So they have a lot of wisdom to impart to younger generations, because they're in a similar situation as so many of us are now. And then, of course, we ask about their attitude on life, which is optimism, and the kinds of things that they think are important for people to be doing, including themselves, to stay active and to be enabled to enjoy life at later years. And of course, exercise is the number one key. And they all, and every centenarian said that the most important thing a person can do is to take good care of your health. But they firmly believe in exercise, not diet so much, but exercise.
Now, on the book section, Money-Wise and Time-Tested, you know, I found it was so important with the advice that the people gave you about just saving money, because if you don't have enough money as you get older, it's certainly a problem. And the majority said, you know, it's really a battle of needs versus wants.
Right.
And I love the fact that they said debt is a four-letter word.
Isn't that wonderful? Don't you just love that? And it's true. And so many of them pointed out that they just would not waste money paying interest. And I think that that's something that we today don't think of. We just sort of assume that that's an expense.
You are so right. Now, one of the things I learned from reading your book that surprised me was how many centenarians live independently. In fact, 35% do in their own home or apartment or an apartment in a retirement center. And that really, you know, I was amazed at that high percentage. So what are the few things you learned from your research that surprised you?
Well, that really was the most surprising. And then also, how many are continuing to drive? And I recognize that people, you know, have different opinions about people who are driving when they're older. But centenarians can be very, very competent drivers. And they really love living independently, and they value it. I mean, I just did a quick story. I mean, a dear friend of mine, Cliff Cahart, enjoys mowing his lawn. He still uses a push mower because he thinks it's good exercise. I mean, it's extraordinary the things that people can do at 100 if they maintain their health.
And another thing I found reading your book was that the centenarians were able to adapt to all those changes that have come about, the new technologies and our problems in this country.
Yes, and so many are using technology, and they're using computers, they're using iPhones, and it's amazing.
Now, in your book, you made the point that centenarians are a diverse group of distinctive individuals.
Yes.
So why is it good that aging is individualized?
Well, they made it so that there is no one model centenarian, and there's not one past 100. So that expands the possibilities to all of us to be able to work with what we have and to make the most of it. And I think that gives us all hope. And it even if we're not all going to live to be 100, most of us will live longer than any other time in history, and I think we'll make the most of our whatever time we do have if we just go with what we have and make the very most of it.
Now, you have found 5 common characteristics that were common among the centenarians you interviewed that really allowed them to age excellently and to have a good quality of life, which is something we all want.
Yes.
So can you name 2 of those?
Yes, and I call it the centenarian spirit. As you say, there are 5, but I would say that the 2 most important are a love of life, which includes a sense of humor, and a healthy dose of self-esteem, that's so important, and resilience. Centenarians have a remarkable ability to renegotiate life at every turn, to accept the losses and changes that come with aging, and not let it stop them. A lot of things can go wrong, but they're not quitters.
Lynn Peters Adler, in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Celebrate 100, Centenarian Secrets to Success in Business and Life, published by Wiley. And if you want to go for more information, the website is AdlerCentenarians.org, AdlerCentenarians.org. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Carol Marks returns with a conversation with Lisa Gibbons when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is Carol Marks, the host of our program, in conversation with Lisa Gibbons. She's a TV personality and Alzheimer's advocate, and she's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled Take Two, Your Guide to Creating Happy Endings and New Beginnings, published by Hay House.
Now, you wrote this book drawing from your own personal experiences of starting over. What were the main factors that caused you to have to reexamine your feelings, your truths, your fears?
You know, I think that it's a universal experience that, you know, life changes on the way to happily ever after. We think we're en route somewhere, and it kind of piles up on top of us, and we lose our way. We kind of forget our, we can't hear our music anymore. It's like somebody changed the music, and we don't know the steps. So for me, it probably started when my mom got Alzheimer's disease and my role as her daughter changed. So there was one label, and then my oldest child went off to college and that label began to change. My marriage ended and that label was heartbreaking and very difficult. And then I decided I was going to leave my job, which was really my safety my real comfort zone in life and start this foundation. And so I knew that I had to show up for my life and for myself in a new way. And I had to figure out, okay, who am I now and which parts of me do I want to bring along and, you know, which parts do I want to completely edit out? So it was time for me to hit the reset button.
You wrote in your book, in response to all these challenges, you came up with what you call a transformation proclamation. And you said it's really a promise you need to make yourself. So what is the importance of you doing that and of people learning, you know, about doing something similar?
You know, I have several things in the book that I think ritualize our transformation, that allow us to really very tangibly look at how we're facing our fears, to look at how we are reintroducing ourselves to that reflection in the mirror. And for me, one of them really was this transformation proclamation, and it was a set of beliefs, a set of promises that, you know, if I was going to have this better relationship with myself, you know, I knew I needed to treat myself better, and then the rest of the world would kind of follow suit. That's the way it goes. So for me, one of my proclamations was, you know, I proclaimed that at times I will learn to stop achieving and start receiving, allowing myself just to breathe and believe. And I think for many of us, you know, breathe, believe, receive is a very good mantra, because the giving energy, the nurturing energy is really a more comfortable spot for most women. But sometimes, you know, we hold on so tight to things because we're trying to control them. We want to make it better for ourselves or somebody else. And when we hold on so tight is invariably when something gets ripped from our hands, so that we can just open up and receive, you know, receive the answers in places that we haven't been looking. If you want something you don't have, you have to do something you haven't done. And for many of us, for me, that was to reach out and learn to ask for help. So my proclamation, my transformation proclamation, is a series of promises that I've made to myself, that when I'm frustrated and when I am unfulfilled and when I'm negative, you know, I would proclaim that I'll just become a master of change. And I know that sounds simplistic, but we all get to choose another emotional state. We can, you know, none of us can say, we can't go back and rewrite life before the diagnosis, for example, before the divorce, before we got fired, whatever. We can't go back and redo that, but we do get to decide how angry it makes us, how negative we are about it. We get to decide how to adapt and change, because change is that inevitable thing.
Oh,
it's that
sure,
sure
is.
Thing.
Whether we want it or not. And you've also said that we need to find women who are good role models, and you have a wonderful role model in your friend Maria Shriver, because she fearlessly made important changes in her life, and she never looked back, and that's so important.
She faced down fear, and I think that Maria is one of my sheroes, because no one has been through more change, some of which she has created in the world because she comes from a family that knows how to do that, but a lot of it has been forced upon her, beginning with, you know, the change that we all share, which is we're all stepping forward in life and getting older. And so as we, you know, as we age, and we want to age fearlessly and gracefully, and, you know, we want to keep our mind, our body, our soul, our relationships, all of those things we want to keep strong, I think we can't be afraid to, what I say, break up with yourself. So if you've got a toxic relationship, you know, for the guys where they've got that crazy girlfriend, or the girls have a bad boyfriend, we understand, you know, you got to break up. Well, sometimes we're not, you know, we're our own worst enemy. We're not really good friends to ourselves. So we do have to kind of let go of that person we used to be, so that we can step into the one that's waiting for us.
Now, you talked earlier, you know, about the importance of your career, and you've always depended on it, and you've also said that when growth comes through change. So can you tell us about, because it must have been a really kind of traumatic day when you said no to the show that was so much a part of your life, Extra. So what did they want you to do, and why did you turn down the request, and what was the end result of your doing that? Because that must have taken a lot of thinking about it, and courage.
I had decided to walk through the door of opportunity when Mom got sick, and she said, you know, you've been a reporter all your life. You're a storyteller. So this is now your story, and all you need to think about is just tell your story, tell your story. And this was in the early stages of her disease. So that's what led me to open and create a nonprofit and to begin to offer support for family caregivers. Basically, we created in the world what we wish we'd had when Mom was on her journey with Alzheimer's. So when I was at work and dealing with this and trying to come to terms with it, I was, you know, like I think everybody, in denial and frustrated and, you know, snapping and having crying jags and all the rest of it. And I was out on, we had just created the foundation, and I was out on one of our first kind of public appearances speaking to a group of people on behalf of the foundation when I got a call from work that I needed to come back and do an interview with some celebrity. And, you know, it was important and it was urgent, and the message was pretty much, we really need you to come back here. And I said, but I can't come back. I've got this commitment. This is what I'm doing. And I knew that if I decided not to come, that would close that door. And I decided, okay, I've got an opportunity now to show up. Mom always said, show up, do your best, let go of the rest. And I knew this was the show up part of the path for me. And so I said goodbye to that job. I said, I'm not going to come back. It was handled all very amicably. They understood that this was my passion, but I left it behind for several years while I went out to explore who do I need to be now. And work was where I always hid. You know, when pain would come into my life, I would get over busy. We all go somewhere. You know, we shop too much, we spend too much money, we gamble, we drink too much, we sleep too much, we don't sleep enough. We always go somewhere to hide. And for me, it was work. So yes, that was a pivotal point in my life. But I've really never looked back and never went for a second regretted it. I'm so grateful.
Lisa Gibbons in conversation with Carol Marks, and her book is titled Take Two, Your Guide to Creating Happy Endings and New Beginnings, published by Hay House. We have more conversation between Carol Marks and Lisa Gibbons coming up in just a moment. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE, or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, and part two of her conversation with Lisa Gibbons. And in this segment, Lisa is going to be talking about hosting the Conversations in Caregiving webcast. Very interesting.
Now, let's talk now about the foundation, the Lisa Gibbons Memory Foundation that you started in 2002. And for those who don't know, what is its mission?
Our mission is to provide comfort, care, hope, and healing and help for the husbands and wives, the sons and daughters, many times the friends, the family caregivers who are showing up to take care of someone they love who is sick or dying. So when you get that diagnosis and you go, oh, my gosh, now what? We're here to help you figure out How do you find resources? How do you take care of yourself? Because as you know, when you're taking care of someone else and you're a family caregiver, the stress can be so much that you can begin to really count backwards from 10 years. You can begin to take 10 years off your life, which is not okay, because of the burden of caring for someone else. So we thought, here's an opportunity for us to really care for the caregiver and to help these people call on their courage and summon their strength to know that you can hang on to yourself even while you're letting go of someone you love.
And you have some signature programs, Lisa's Place and Lisa's Care Connection, which really help caregivers. So what services do they get when they contact these wonderful organizations?
Thank you for asking. These are our communities of family members who get together, and we have a series of programs. We also have free services. Our program is designed really to help you come up with a team, but also to help you express your anger, get some respite, figure out, you know, how to do what you need to do next. And so we have everything from Ask the Doctor series to art therapy, and we have dancing and tone-up sessions and just everything to help you take your oxygen first, because, you know, it's counterintuitive to most caregivers, but you have to nourish yourself, mind, body, soul, and spirit before you can go on this marathon. And it's not a sprint, you know, it's a marathon. And so we help you get enough education, empowerment, and also energy to sustain yourself.
Now, let's talk a little bit about something that you're going to be hosting October 8th, which will also help those who are having to caregive to a loved one. Let's talk about Conversations in Caregiving and that webcast.
Our webcast is such a great resource for people who are on this path. So if you're concerned about Alzheimer's, if you are somewhere along the journey, our focus October 8th, and it's at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a live webcast, but you can sign up for it right now. It's free. You just register so that you can ask your questions at alzheimersdisease.com. And at alzheimersdisease.com, you can also see our other webcasts. We've been doing this with Novartis for 3 years, and it's been amazingly supportive for family caregivers. When you go to the website, you'll see my family videos. I'm so proud of my dad and my sister, my brother and my sister-in-law, our kids. They all talk about their experience, because I think knowing that you're not alone is really important. Our focus on the 8th is really something that family caregivers have been very enthusiastic about us getting to, which is solutions for care, long-term care. What do we do as the disease progresses, as my loved one declines? You know, what kinds of options are available for me? How do I know what's right? How do I know when it's right? You know, what if I promised mom, you know, that I would always take care of her at home and now I can't? What do I do? How do I handle that? So we're going to look at all of those things with a panel of experts. And you just pop in and join us at alzheimersdisease.com. That's all there is.
Lisa Gibbons in conversation with Carol Marks. If you'd like more information, go to alzheimersdisease.com. That's alzheimersdisease.com. Coming up next, Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent, talking about Obamacare. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment. We'll be right back.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We've come to the point in the program where we're joined by our senior correspondent, Stephen J.J. Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is a lawyer. He's an author. He is a webmaster. His website is called scamicide.com. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And he's here now to talk about Obamacare. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, is finally with us with the starting date of the insurance exchanges, when people can actually purchase the insurance to comply with the new law. The new law will require people to have their insurance in place prior to January 1st, or there would be a financial penalty. Always out there to take advantage of any new law, particularly one as confusing as the Affordable Care Act, are the scammers. The scam artists, the only criminals we refer to as artists. And there are a lot of things for people to be on the lookout for. One of the easiest thing is, if you are over 65 and on Medicare, it's very easy to know what you need to do regarding the Affordable Care Act. And that is nothing, because if you are on Medicare, you already have insurance that complies with the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. So it is not necessary for you to get anything further. You will get some calls from scammers, and they'll tell you because of the Affordable Care Act, you need to get a new Medicare card. And they'll ask for your number of your present card, or maybe your bank and credit card information. information. First of all, there are no new Medicare cards that are being required by the Affordable Care Act. And if someone asks you for that, all they're doing is trying to get your Medicare number, which is your Social Security number, which is the key to identity theft. And they certainly don't need your bank or credit card information. Frankly, if you get a call from a so-called government official or anyone who represents that they are a government official through a telephone call, an email, or a text about your health insurance and they want to verify personal information, they're a scammer. The government is not going to be calling you, not going to be emailing you, not going to be texting you, and they certainly will not be asking about your personal information. So we can. This is the kind of thing you can get through, but you do have to be wary in regard to the various plans. Another thing that you'll probably see is people trying to sell you medical discount plans, and these aren't even health insurance. They're usually membership in a club that claims to offer cheaper prices from certain doctors or pharmacies that they've negotiated lower prices. In fact, the Federal Trade Commission has said that a lot of these are scams and don't even follow through on the promised services. Others are just, again, trying to get your personal or financial information. So the bottom line when it comes to all of this is be careful. You never want to give personal information like a Social Security number or a credit card to anyone who calls you, texts you, or emails you, because regardless of whether it's legitimate or not, you can't be sure. If you ever get a call, an email, or a text that you think may be legitimate regarding anything, call back a number that you know is legitimate, and then you can find out. But you got to be careful, because the scammers are going to be out there in great numbers. But if you take a few precautions, you should be okay.
Thank you, Steve. Very interesting information. Of course, Steve Wiseman has written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and you can visit his website, scamaside.com. Steve Wiseman is one of our senior correspondents here in A Touch of Gray, and that about does it for the program. Beverly Santanello, thank you for the fine job you do on the front line as our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Thanks, Steve Wiseman. Thanks to the entire Touch of Gray broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.